the most comprehensive arms control agreement in nearly two decades.
I do plan to return to golf one day.
I'm sure he's going to still be a terrific golfer.
Downtown area was got hit the worst.
Just to give you a sense of perspective. Oh, what's going on?
Monday morning is time for the weekly agenda on The Takeaway. Joining us is Marcus Mabry, national editor for our partner, The New York Times. Bit of a promotion there, Marcus.
Yeah.
Congratulations. I didn't see the advance team on your way in, but I guess we'll wait for them since you're
outside.
National editor now. And Rob Watson, correspondent for our partner, the BBC. Welcome, gentlemen, to you both. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, and congratulations to Marcus.
He's glowing. He's glowing. He's the boss. Well, Rob, before we get into too much adulation for Marcus, let me start with you, because on Thursday of this week, President Obama and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev will sign this new nuclear arms reduction treaty in Prague. This replaces START, which expired in December, START, the old treaty from, I guess, the 70s. Now, how important is this new nuclear arms treaty? And I want to ask you, because the new threat these days is supposed to be not intercontinental ballistic missiles and mutually assured destruction, but asymmetrical threats, terrorism. So is this a big deal?
It is a big deal. You're absolutely right to put on the one side just how important is it militarily in terms of the kind of threats the United States and its allies deal with. It is, of course, very different. But to take the treaty itself, it is very important for four reasons. I mean, for the first place, it is a foreign policy success for President Obama. Number two, we haven't had an arms control treaty for a long time. Anything that reduces the numbers, keeps them from growing, is obviously seen as a good thing. Third, it may well help in resetting, as has been talked about, the relationship between Washington and Moscow. And again, back on the issue of nukes, anything that can help the big powers, the big Western powers, to push the agenda of non-proliferation is going to be seen as a good thing, certainly in the West.
Non-proliferation is, and especially preventing nuclear arms from falling into the asymmetrical hands, the ones we always talk about, the hands of terrorism.
Absolutely.
Well, Marcus Mabry from The New York Times, Timothy Geithner, U.S. Treasury Secretary, heads to India this week for talks on major economic ties between the two nations. What is on his agenda? Because ordinarily, we might not pay too much attention to a U.S. Treasury Secretary traveling abroad, but this trip's important.
It's important because it's widely recognized in both countries that India and the U.S. have not done as much as they could to foment a stronger economic relationship between the two. It's increasingly seen as the U.S. and China have had major differences over things like the value of China's currency,
right,
and how much of an advantage it gives the Chinese, for instance, on global markets, and how much it costs American exports and eventually American jobs. India could be a counterweight to that, and the U.S. has not exploited that fully, and India could benefit tremendously from greater economic cooperation with the U.S. They are the largest democracy in the world, and they are real, even though they're growing tremendously, about 6 to 8%, what they expect for the year. They can grow even faster than that if they were to unclog a lot of development problems they have in their country.
So the U.S., in a way, hoping to leverage India against China, in the background is China, and leverage them in the problem with devaluation of the currency.
Much in the same way that Nixon kind of leveraged China against the Soviet Union politically in his era.
Geopolitics and the chess pieces move. Rob, you guys are having elections soon in the United Kingdom, or so it seems, because Prime Minister Gordon Brown is due to call elections there. Well, just like in the United States, it seems conservatives are surging in your country. Are we going to see the first Tory government in many, many years in your country?
Well, you're absolutely right that Gordon Brown is expected to do that little constitutional nicety of taking the short drive from 10 Downing Street to Buckingham Palace, no doubt have a quick cup of tea with the Queen and tell her that he's going to call an election for May the 6th. Certainly, the opinion polls, the average, give the Conservatives about an 8% lead. Now, in the US system, that would clearly mean that you'd have a presidential winner, no bother. But of course, we have parliamentary democracy. We have these slightly out-of-date constituency boundaries. So if that was repeated, if that really was to be the Conservative lead, we would have a hung parliament in Britain. In other words, no party would have a majority. And we haven't had that since 1974. But that's not to say, of course, that the polls aren't wrong and that the votes won't split slightly differently and that the Conservatives may or may not win.
And Gordon Brown, well, he must have a degree of confidence if he's calling the election now.
Well, he has no choice. So I don't think it's much a degree of confidence, but you couldn't. This government couldn't last any longer than June the 6th. So he's short of mounting a coup and telling the Queen, please, 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 don't get rid of me. He's really got not much else, really any other options.
We'll see if the Prime Minister's on bended knee at Buckingham Palace as he goes to see the head of state in the UK. Well. Gordon Brown may have no choice but to get in the game in the UK, and Tiger Woods is returning to the game here in the United States. This has to be on the agenda. Marcus Mabry, listen to Tiger here talking about his return to golf.
I do plan to return to golf one day. I just don't know when that day will be. I don't rule out that it will be this year. When I do return, I need to make my behavior more respectful of the game.
Well, we'll have a chance to prove that on Tuesday as the Masters starts. Tickets are going for $2,400, Marcus Mabry. Would you pay to see this tournament?
If I had a different job, I'd pay $2,400.
Oh, come on. You just got promoted. Don't try to say you can't.
Not pay more. This is some of the excitement inherent in the story came up yesterday when the Associated Press reported that without warning, quote unquote, Tiger Woods arrived on Sunday for the Masters. I mean, you could not imagine more excitement around golf. I mean, even with all the scandal that's plagued Woods, obviously, golf itself could not be more excited than to have this guy back on the tour.
Huge for the PGA. Rob Watson, how is the Tiger Woods story playing in the UK? Are people as excited there to see him golf again?
Oh, yes. No, it's a big story. Everybody knows Tiger, and you can imagine we Brits, we have a very fruity sense of humor, so you can imagine the office jokes that were doing the rounds when he was in the rough, as it were.
I was going to ask for an example, but I think I just got it of the fruity sense of humor from our friends across the pond. Well, Rob Watson, correspondent for our partner, the BBC, doing some Tiger watching and some Gordon Brown watching for us, and, of course, Marcus Mabry with us here in the studio. He used to be international business editor for our partner, the New York Times. No more. He's now national editor, and we congratulate him. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.